now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. On the show today, the Mad Gay King.
Yeah, not me. Steph finds out all about the retelling of one of history's most famous kings.
And who the F is Shakespeare?
Yeah, I had to put it like that because you can't actually say what it actually is. We talked to Amir Conrad about this touring play.
All today, right here on Shout Out. Oh.
Lara will be so pleased
that somebody did the dum 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 bit. Yeah.
Hello. Are you? Sorry, I haven't been with you for a while.
Yeah,
my voice is almost that. It's still a bit deep.
Yeah, it makes you sound very butch, doesn't it, when you have that kind of gravelly voice?
Are you saying I don't normally sound butch?
I wasn't implying anything about your usual voice.
So, yes. How are we all?
All right, thank you.
All good. I think we ought to pre-record the dum-dum-dum at the end of the intro, and so that we got, you know, somebody who's actually got decent voice.
Ooh! We'll get one of our singers.
Right, I was thinking of not me.
it's been the backing thing we talked over almost since the beginning. It wasn't the original one. The original one was the Queer as Folk theme.
Well, yes, it was, wasn't it? That was our original music. Yeah,
and we both brought it back for a little while when it was like an anniversary, I think.
Yeah.
So
maybe we'll have to change the beat every so often just to really confuse people.
Aren't we 15 years old soon?
Next year.
Next year, June the 7th, 2015.
Yes. Yeah, there's lots of changes coming up.
Yeah.
2 weeks' time, we're changing our broadcast time.
That's right.
Now, that's only for listeners on BCFM,
Wave and Froome.
Are they all moving with us to 8 o'clock?
Wave is. I haven't heard anything from Froome. Hello, Froome FM. How are you? If you're listening on Froome FM, knock on the door of the studios and tell them that we're moving an hour.
So, yeah, but yes, after 14 and a half years, that's 7 o'clock, almost, because we started half past one on a Monday. But our main slot's always been 7.
If Froome FM do not move, then I'll tell Ben, who's going to be doing Rebel on the Radio slot, to introduce himself to Froome FM.
Because he'll be going out on their station as well, yes.
So, but yeah, in two weeks' time, we move an hour. Ironically, it's the week the clocks go back too. So...
Is it?
Yeah, because they'll have gone back. Oh, no, it's the end of October.
It's not the end.
Too early.
A little bit early. Okay.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
So, yeah, we will be moving till 8 o'clock. So
8 till 9 p.m.
If you're listening on the other stations, their time's not changing, and obviously you can always grab us on the podcast too. So.
No, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not coming in anymore. I'm not doing
too
it
late.
Until 9. It's past my bedtime.
It is going to make a change, isn't it, for the team? Because when we sort of like go for a post-pub drink, we're going to have to think about...
A quick half.
You're going to have to think about the old people in the team. Like, you know, people like on their Zimmers.
But you don't have to get up that early, do you?
I wake up at 5. I'm out with the dog by 6.
Oh, you'll have to wake up at 6.
Some people say that's the secret to a long life.
What, early starts?
Early starts, 5, 6 o'clock risers, apparently. Yeah,
me too.
I do have a nap. If I can get a siesta in for 20 minutes, half hour.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
I do like
that. They
do
say the older you get, less sleep. Genuinely true.
I'm usually knackered come 3 p.m. I need a nap. And then I'm fine. And then 10 o'clock and I fall off a cliff again.
I used to work with a chap who at 2:30 every day when we were... He didn't care. He was going to be made redundant soon anyway. But at this insurance company where I worked, he used to put his hand on his brow and just put his head down and just pretend he was looking at something.
And he was asleep.
I can remember certain early morning Saturday presenters here on BCFM falling asleep and pushing all of the microphones up.
Yes, that happened, didn't it? Yeah.
And then the track that was playing would stop and all you could hear was some snoring.
Because they pushed on the microphone. Kicking in the groove.
I won't mention names. I don't think they're with us anymore. I think they left quite a few years ago.
I used to have an afternoon nap when I worked for for AstraZeneca. I shared an office. We were like the tech department, so we looked at the stats for the drugs and that. And about 2 or 3 o'clock, we put a big notice up on the window of the door saying meeting in progress, so they couldn't see in and wouldn't knock.
Oh, wonderful!
So we had these lovely leather chairs, high backed, reclined. Gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it quite famously? Was it British Leyland in the '70s?
Allegedly.
So
the
night shifts.
They used to just the sun and the mirror went after them, and they had photographs of them all snoring in beds.
Yeah. They actually installed like a sleeping.
Yeah,
quarters.
And they should be making Morris Marinas.
Oh dear.
What was it? Ivan used to call it a nana nap.
A nana.
It used to be like, yeah, you know, if you have a power nap,
it's supposed to be really good for you. A little nap.
Yeah. Well, Richard Branson said that everyone should have a power nap, like only 10 to 20 minutes, because it re-energizes. He encouraged the staff at Virgin.
Yeah, he's quite a progressive employer, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I believe human beings are supposed to actually sleep twice. That's why in a lot of other countries they sleep in the heat of the day.
That's right.
A lot of animals do that too, don't they?
Only
mad dogs and Englishmen go in the midday sun.
And if you're wondering where the queer content is gone here, queer people also need a nana nap.
Yes, contrary to what you might have read in the Daily Mail, LGBTQIA+ people do sleep. We're not always plotting the downfall of civilization.
Or arranging the weather.
They made it nice today. Those trans people made it wonderful weather today.
Well, we did. Me and Tara spent a lot of time getting to the right.
Getting off my broom now.
Mad Gay Kings.
Yeah, interesting chat.
It sounded it.
I found out more about this king in this interview than I knew about him before. He is mad.
Cool. Well, let's have a listen.
Guess what? People of Shout Out Land, we're off to the theatre again. This time, the Mad Gay King. Now, that in itself is very intriguing. And I'm not actually going to say much about this. I'm going to leave that to Christopher Adams Cohen. And also, we'll tell you where it is and how to get tickets and social medias at the end of the chat. Christopher, welcome to Shout Out.
Hi, Steffi. It's so lovely to be here.
Now, how did you get into theatre? Is that something you've been doing for a long, long time?
Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in LA, and I was in a children's chorus. And whenever LA Opera would do some sort of opera, or there was a philharmonic show that needed children's voices, they would bring us in. So I was often taken out of school to be backstage, learning choral music, and then hopping on to sing in Turandot or The Damnation of Faust, what have you, which is an interesting way to grow up in an opera house. But it gave me a love for that sort of transformation of the theater. I loved being backstage, seeing people put on their corsets and their makeup and transforming into epic characters and having love scenes and death scenes on stage. And I was very lucky that, you know, a lot of quite avant-garde European directors were flown in. The first opera I ever did was with Achim Fryer. So I got a broad sense of what theater could be in a town that isn't necessarily known for its theater. So that was sort of what whet my appetite originally.
Okay, here's a question for you. What's your favorite opera?
My favorite, well, this actually is, I think the one that I've been thinking about the most is Tannhäuser, the Wagner opera, largely because, as we will get to, Wagner is a character in this play and was quite a central figure in King Ludwig II of Bavaria's life. The music is incredibly stirring, but the story is absolutely infuriating, which is one of the things that I love about it. And I would love one day to have a crack at directing it, because it is so moralistic and puritanical, but the music is so erotic and driving and exciting. So I kind of love that tension, and I'd love to kind of explore it one day. As I said, I came of age in LA, and it wasn't a huge institutional theater scene. So I was doing a lot of immersive warehouse theater. sort of collaboratively devised underground queer theater. But in order to pay the bills, because we were living in these warehouses, we would also do after hours, like LGBTQ plus parties. That was sort of the where this kind of birth of these worlds, I think, came from. So we would do the 7 p.m. immersive theater show about, you know, it could be anything from, we did a show called Erotica that was all based on Anais Nin's and Henry Miller's time, where they had to pay their way by writing erotica for a mysterious stranger patron. And we riffed off of this and did a whole, each room of the warehouse was a different part of the erotic imagination. It was very strange and exciting. But then we would close up shop, and then at 2 a.m. when all the bars in LA closed, we would throw a rave. And so these worlds kind of got intermingled. But it wasn't, I was writing throughout that time, but sort of more in a collaborative way or a casual way. It wasn't until we did a tour of one of our shows, which was, it was a silly show. It was a theatrical drinking game. Very fun, very social. But we went to Berlin, and I sort of fell in love with Berlin and the freedom that I felt there and the interdisciplinary nature of everything. So I wound up moving to Berlin and living there for 3 years. And that's when I kind of sat down and had the time and space to really get into my writing, find my voice as a writer. So I worked with the collaborative company in Berlin, but then all the while I was finishing this script and really sort of curating a team around me of artists that I was excited by, people whose you know, choreography I'd seen in a nightclub, or someone who's was an electronic music producer I'd seen do a gallery show in some random part of Neukölln, and just sort of building this team around me. And we found this disused, sort of crumbling silent film palace, and we decided, you know what, we're going to stage this play. And so it was very sort of DIY, self-driven, in the way that I think queer art can be. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and say, well, we're going to do this. We don't have the institutional support, but we have a vision and a lot of energy. So we did it. So I would say, yes, I've been in the world of performance and curating and making and writing for a while now. But it wasn't until I moved to London 2 years ago that, you know, I came here to do my master's, and I had never seen such a vibrant, alive, new writing and theater industry or community. I think when I my first year here, I was seeing 2 to 3 plays a week. I didn't even know that that was possible. I didn't know that there was anywhere in the world where you could do that. And so this play that's going up at the King's Head Theatre in October, The Mad Gay King, it'll be my first kind of 3 week, I guess 3 week run. It's the longest I've ever had a play up, and it's the most ambitious piece I've done, and it's the first piece I'm doing in the UK. I'm a little nervous, but I'm mostly just very thrilled and excited, and excited to share it with everyone.
It sounds like an absolute extravaganza with the music.
It's about King Ludwig II of Bavaria, who was the last king of Bavaria, a decadent 19th century monarch who, as I said, funded all of Wagner's operas, built this flight of fairy tale castles, and was ultimately forcibly deposed by his conservative government on the grounds of homosexual insanity. So right off the bat, I thought, you know, this has theatrical potential. I had visited one of Ludwig's castles, and there's a lot that's still not known about the circumstances of his death. He was deposed, and then 3 days later found dead in a lake with his committing doctor. And no one's quite knows what happened. There's a lot of things that are concealed, but more has come out in recent years about the fact that the evidence that was used to have him declared insane was largely to do with his homosexuality. And this was kept out of the official diagnosis, not to embarrass the royal family. I really felt that there was an untold story there. And I also, as I was doing more research, there were all of these, I started finding all these websites that were full of these apocryphal love letters that were said to be locked away in the royal archive. So in addition to thinking, oh, I'd love to find out about Ludwig's love life, I also was intrigued about the way that people were telling the story. And it got me really thinking about how we build queer myths as, you know, how we use fantasy and conjecture to create our own worlds as queer people, and how we have to often build our own heroes and our own myths and sort of fill in those gaps. So the play itself, it centers around a love story, a true love story that, you know, I've had to fill in some gaps, but there's quite a lot that can be uncovered between Ludwig and his horse master, Richard Hornig. But the play itself is a bit of a memory play. So it takes place a year after the king's death, and his lover, he comes to the spot where Ludwig died and relives the memory of their romance. So right off the bat, I wanted to introduce this idea that, yes, we're telling the story of this unsung queer hero from history, but it's more about the way that we're remembering him, which I think, and how do we remember him, and what, how do we take this fantasy world that he created and understand when we need fantasy to survive and when fantasy can take us away from the things that will help us survive. That's why there's the extravagance of, you know, we wanted to bring in with this historical source elements of the contemporary queer underground, because to me, the queer underground is where that fantasy is explored today, where the things we don't, again, institutional access often, things we don't have access to, we can create in these fantasy spaces. And so I wanted to create a link between the history and, you know, us today. So for me, I wanted this, we all wanted the story to feel very modern and contemporary, because it is. At the end of the day, it's an eternal love story, something we can all relate to. When I met Jay Aria, who's our composer, Jay Aria is an electronic music producer, resident DJ at Adonis, is really in that more queer dance music world. But to me, that felt really right for the play and the way we wanted to tell the story, because, you know, Ludwig was a bit living in the 19th century, but also ahead of his time. And his obsession with Wagner, whatever complicated feelings I and everyone has about Wagner, at the time, we may think of it now as very traditional, stuffy classical music, but it was radical at the time. And no, the Munich public didn't want to hear it. It was too emotional and erotic and sensational. But Ludwig kept putting money into it and centering it. And he heard something that no one else could hear. And now the world has kind of caught up to that vision. Setting it to Wagner music would have not felt right, because we would feel a remove. So for me, having that more guttural, sensual feeling of contemporary club music is truer to the story, actually.
You've got us drooling now, and everyone wants to go and see it. Where can they put their bums on the seats, and where can they get tickets and the timings and your social media, Christopher?
The play opens on October 3rd and runs through October 18th at King's Head Theatre in Islington. You can find tickets at the King's Head Theatre website. In keeping with this sort of sexy feeling of the show, our performances are at 9 p.m. So it's a little bit of a late night show, but going to be worth it to create that intimate vibe. So it's 9 p.m. Monday through Friday, with 8 p.m. shows on Saturday.
Now your social medias.
So you should follow the play at The Mad Gay King. And mine is a little more elusive. I am Kiki Nietzsche. At Kiki Nietzsche.
Okay. Can I ask why that name?
Actually, that's a name that stuck from my days of running after hours queer parties. It was pretty much as simple as, I'm a philosopher and I love to party.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. I'm glad there's a reason behind that name. Christopher, thank you for joining us at Shout Out. It's been lovely. And don't forget, people, go and watch that. It sounds very intriguing.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out podcast.
Funny enough, that's called Hold the Girl. And that's by, how we going to attempt this?
I'm going to say Rihanna for the first. Rina?
Rina.
Rina. Sawayama.
Sawayama.
There we go.
Sawayama. I think that's how you say it. Apologies if I'm getting your name wrong. I do apologise. I'm usually quite good and Google these things and see if I can find someone like announcing it on another show I can copy it, but I didn't have time to do that with this one.
You're a linguistic expert like the BBC News Channel has to say, this is how you pronounce this name and this is,
It was a bit like Chuti Gatwa as well. I'm sure we started off calling him Ngutty. Sorry, Chuti. We do love you.
But we get it wrong even within the same country, don't we?
We do.
So we try our best. That's the best we can do.
We're community radio. You know,
I mean, they make errors on big stations and networks as well, especially in a country with lots of different spellings.
Well, the BBC interviewed someone who'd come for an interview with a maintenance man or something, and they had him on as a doctor. Do you remember? What are they like? Oh, you're here. He had the same first name, so they plonked him on air. He's like, I'm here for an interview.
I hear the traffic, and when they mention things in Scotland, you think, oh my, really? Oh well.
So, anyway, should we get some news headlines?
Blown up.
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
There's a stern warning from the French courts about the antics of the conspiracy movement after the wife of the French president was awarded €8,000 in damages after transphobes posted utterly unwarranted and false ideas that she'd been assigned male at birth. Brigitte Macron was subject to the claims, which originated with Amandine Roy in December 2021 and spread amongst the far right on the Innocent Wildlife scenario for a while, topping the trending searches. Ms. Macron said in a 2022 interview that at first she ignored the falsehoods, but eventually decided to tackle them head on after they affected her parents and family. Mr. Macron himself spoke out about the right-wing lies a few weeks ago, according to a report in the Independent newspaper. The conspiracy theory was so beyond reality that it actually posited that Ms. Macron had been born as Jean-Michel Trognu, Mr. Macron's brother. Mr. Trognu also received a payout in compensation of some €5,000. It's not the first time a powerful female figure was fit by false claims of being transgender, fueled by internet conspiracy theories. Michelle Obama, the former First Lady of the US, and Jacinda Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, have both been accused of being transgender.
The BBC News Channel reports that new guidance has been written for care homes to support inclusive care practice for the older LGBTQ+ people. Researchers from the University of Kent, in collaboration with the University of Surrey and the University of Hertfordshire, have developed a free guide to help with care of lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans people. The guide was designed by a group of older LGBTQ+ people and care home staff. Dr. Jolly Keemink from the University of Kent Centre for Health Services Study said, "Research shows that the older LGBTQ+ population is expected to rely more heavily on social care than the heterosexual counterparts because they are less likely to have children and more likely to experience a lack of social support. Older LGBTQ+ people may also have unique health risks that increase their likelihood of needing care."
Seattle Anarchist Book Fair takes place on Saturday the 28th and Sunday the 29th of September at the Vera Project, located at the junction of Warren and Republican Streets. Entry is always free, and childcare will be provided whilst you peruse. After a first day of stimulating discussions and revolutionary revelations, you can also get down to the All Ages Benefit Dance on Saturday night at Black Lodge between 8 and 11 p.m. There will be much LGBTQIA plus material on offer at those intersections between gay liberation, queer and feminist politics, and wider political movements for change. Amongst the workshops will be a collective sex worker organising and mutual aid fund. For more information and a list of contributing publishers, you can visit seattleanarchistbookfair.noblogs.org.
Eris Chase, writing at the Andrew Christian blog, pulls no punches in outlining the danger for all who care about freedom of speech, expression and LGBTQI people that comes with political right-wing in America. They write the wretched stench of a steaming pile of rotting trash, and it's called Project 2025, a 920-page dystopian nightmare disguised as a policy proposal. It was written by an amalgamation of ultra-conservative groups who would rather see LGBTQ plus people disappear into the shadows than breathe the same air as them. It's a bloated document full of policies targeting everything from hard-earned rights to healthcare, access to steamy content, and anything they can consider pornography in between. By their definition, pornography can, and if you follow the thread, will include pretty much any and all LGBTQ plus content, since it isn't representative of what they call traditional family values. Anyone caught owning or sharing this so-called porn could end up behind bars. Again, this is all their own words. They also seek to overturn the legal protections that keep LGBTQ plus people safe from discrimination in housing, employment and healthcare. Check out GLAAD.org and their Project 2025 Exposed section for more in-depth information on this.
Now, Queer in the World Shop reminds us that from the 16th of September, we have entered the annual Bisexual Visibility Week. The week runs from the 16th to the 23rd of September, concluding with Bi Awareness Day, and is dedicated to honouring and amplifying the voices and experiences of the bisexual community. Bisexuals occupy a unique and often misunderstood position within the queer community, bridging identities and experiences that challenge traditional notions of sexuality. As such, this week we look to recognise and celebrate the vital role of bisexual people in enriching our community's diversity and inclusivity, as well as the unique challenges and triumphs that come with bisexual identity. The week will conclude, therefore, with Bi Visibility Day on Monday, that's the 23rd of September, and the celebrations will start in the weekend before it. Events are taking place nationally and locally and can be found online at allthews.bivisibilityday.com. However you're marking it, we hope you have an enjoyable and safe time.
The calendar moves inexorably to onwards, and we've already spotted first commercials appearing on television which reference the C word. We, of course, shall rise above referring to that particular festival just yet. But anyway, this weekend the summer draws to its final close as day and night are equal once again. An astronomical autumn starts as we enter the dark half of the year. This time of year is important to Christians, who will be marking a harvest festival, humanists who follow the changes of the season, and many different types of pagan, for whom the coming of autumn is one of the spokes in the wheel of the year. The New Age bookstore, Goddess and the Green Man in Glastonbury, has this to say about the festival. Night and day are again of equal length and in perfect equilibrium, dark and light, masculine and feminine, inner and outer balance. But we are again on the cusp of transition, and from now and the year now it begins to wane, and from this moment darkness begins to defeat the light. The cycle of the natural world is moving towards completion. The sun's power is waning, and from now on the nights grow longer and the days are shorter and cooler. We are returning to the dark from whence we came.
Oh, I love autumn nights. That sounds wonderful. Now, across Bristol and Bath in particular, we welcome students this weekend, as it's Freshers' Weekend, when first-year students arrive at college. For many, it will be their first time of living away from home, and it is to those students we send a particular welcome. Starting studies and being in a new and exciting city can be very liberating, and there is a considerable crossover between Bristol's gay scene and student accommodation districts, with welcoming pubs and cafes. At the same time, time, some people may be struggling with homesickness or any other aspect of emotional and mental health, and it can be difficult to manage on top of the demands of your courses. So we urge you to reach out for each other and use student counselling services where necessary or your college's nightline service. You will also find a welcoming voice on community and grassroots radio. We at Shoutout originate on BCFM on 93.2 FM. There's Ujima, which is led by the African Caribbean Communities at 98 FM. If you're living in South Bristol or environs, then your community station is KTCR on 105.8. And in the North Bristol burbs, as Steffi would say, the burbs, Bradley State Radio on 103.4 FM. In addition, across the UE campus, you can find the hub student radio on 1449 medium wave and digital DAB radio, and in Bath, University Radio is on the same channel. If you're starting your student life, we wish you every success in your studies and remind you that you will fill a lively and welcoming LGBTQIA plus scene at venues across our cities.
Once more, it's been a busy week in LGBTQIA politics and culture. We'll be back next week with more, but in the meantime, why not check out our web feeds at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr
and Steffi Barnett.
Yeah. Shoutout News,
national and international LGBT news for you.
What's he work on, I say? Chris.
Rehearsals, we're having them from a level of, oh, this is what we're feeling, but also, what are the things that maybe we have never considered, never thought about, and what it means for me as a person of color and what it means for Becca as a white person are totally different experiences. And for me also being Muslim, like that's a whole totally different experience. So it's been really exciting in rehearsals to have, yeah, cast and company that feel reflective of the stories that we're telling when it comes to gender, when it comes to race, when it comes to class. Yeah, it's something I feel very passionately about.
Is the cast very big? You say you're covering four of Shakespeare's plays. So does that mean you've got a big cast, or have you got a lot of people playing multiple roles?
We've got a cast of four. So they're all multi-rolling for each other. So we've got Harriet O'Grady playing Cleopatra, Jada Lee Warrican playing Ophelia, Mary Savage playing Lady Macbeth, and as I've said, Becca Barton playing Viola. And all four of them play all of the other roles for each other. So when I was creating this, I was thinking about the kinds of spaces and safe spaces that I found myself in my friend groups and going, oh, how do we unpack our stories and our traumas and the good stuff and the bad stuff that happens to us. 9 times out of 10 for me, it happens at brunch with my friends, with my queer friends, with my women friends who want to explore these conversations in like a safe and fun way that doesn't feel like it's re-traumatizing us. And I thought, oh, this is how these characters have to do it. They have to be friends going through this thing, and they have to be young people today exploring these topics. So it's a relatively young cast. I think they're all under 30, there and thereabouts. And yeah, I've just asked, sorry, it's just noisy in here. I've asked the central question, what would they be like if they were alive today, if they were out and about today, hanging out with each other, calling each other out on some of the things that they deal with, calling each other in, teaching each other, helping each other. And hopefully by the end, they all come out a bit stronger and as if they've gotten the chance to rewrite their narratives and give themselves new potentials. You could still come to it if you've never read a Shakespeare and understand the plays. I think what I've been trying really to do is to give context to the plays and when they were written and why they might have explored certain topics, but then also question the plays and question their importance and their relevance and why these characters have to deal with these things.
Now, we're fast running out of time here, Amira. Can you give us a rundown on where people can get tickets, where the show is actually being set, and also your social media so people can follow you?
Absolutely. So we're in Liverpool at the Unity Theatre on the 19th, 20th and 21st of September. Shakespeare North in Prescott on the 24th, Bolton Octagon on the 27th and 28th, of September, and then in Contact, Manchester, the 3rd and 4th of October, Storyhouse Chester on the 10th of October, and the Bernie Grant Arts Centre in London on the 18th and 19th. And for 20 Stories High, it's just at 20 Stories High on everything except X. And for me, it's at Amira Conrad on pretty much everything. Yeah.
Okay. Amira Conrad.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt. Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Teenage Dream, that's by The Rescues. Lovely version of that one,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, nice version.
Yeah. Nice and chill.
Yeah. I just realised as well, although it's going to be weird because when we move to 8, we'll have more shows in the dark, but it's dark.
It is dark.
It's dark outside.
It is, yes.
So we
first
hit that
time
point.
Is autumn, yes.
Hit that point, and it's weird because you kind of get used to it, shout out, but you can tell it's like, I'm leaving the studio in the dark.
Yeah, but my life was in the dark for a long time. When you're in the work and when you're hidden, you spend your life.
Yeah, but you're used to it. You come from north of Hadrian's Wall.
And Terry's used to it because he lives under the stairs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 6 months of the year, isn't it, in Scotland, is dark.
Not that bad. Although I did move down here for better weather, let's be honest. And in fact, it was easier to come out, yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, you've actually been down here quite some time now.
Probably, yeah, 25, 26 years.
See, I reckon Tara's pretending there's anything north of Cheltenham. there isn't, you know, really.
We don't have any evidence of this.
10-hour drive to get back.
Oh dear.
Where the Northern Lights are.
They have come down as far as I know, actually. But it was really weird because I remember them saying it. Me and Carl went out in the garden and we could just see this like little white stuff. But then you take a photo with your phone, you can see all the colours.
Exactly.
So why can't I see that with my eyes? But apparently it's to do with like all the light pollution and stuff like that. So when we were in St David's in Wales a couple of weeks ago, I was staggered how many stars there are because you're in the middle of nowhere. Stars. So there's no light pollution. You look up and you can see so many more stars.
Can you see the Milky Way?
Yeah, you can see the tail of it. So,
do you have any derogatory terms for English people?
the French call us roast beef. Asking. Don't
know. Well, beef feeds,
Ross
beef. It's called Sassenach.
Sassenach. What does that actually mean? Is it?
I don't know.
Saxons.
Well, you're also called white settlers, where I come from.
White settlers?
In Wales, it's the same. It's the Sice, which is the Saxon for Saxons.
Is it?
So you're from.
I know my dad used to be Scottish. He used to have a Scottish friend, my dad. You called him a haggis basher.
Yeah, there you go.
Is it the Americans that call us limeys because we're so white?
No, that's something to do with the lack of vitamin C. On the boats they used to carry limes
to
compensate for vitamin
C. But they do call us limeys.
Which is rickets, isn't it? That gives you rickets.
It gives it rickets, lack of vitamin C, the Cornish call people from Devon Emmets, which is ant, because they sort of scurry around aimlessly whilst visiting tourist sites, apparently. That's what I'm told.
Oh dear.
I love it. We're finishing off a show by insulting each other. Well, never mind. Welcome to Shoutout. Anyway, that's it for this week. As we have been saying all show, please remember, Shoutout is moving time. So if you listen live on Thursday from October onwards, we will be an hour later.
So that's it. Same show on Thursdays. Live show will start at 8 p.m.
Still the same on other stations, of course, and podcast as normal. Next week, the world is listening. I thought they already were. From myself, from Terry, from Steph, from Tara, and the rest of the clan, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.